The United States regulates the organ and tissue transplant industry, but not when it comes to the sale of body parts. When people donate their bodies to research, their loved ones often don't know how their remains will be stored or even used. Reuters investigative reporters John Schiffman and Brian Groh have explored this in a recent series called The Body Trade. They also look at how some companies are making millions from these donations, which often come from poor families or friends who can't afford funerals for their loved ones. John Schiffman and Brian Groh join us now. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having us.
How does donating a body or body parts differ from donating an organ?
Should I address these questions?
I'm sure you both know the answers to pretty much every question I'm going to ask. Should I address it to each of you? So because we are both with us by phone, and you can't give each other any eye contact to suggest that this one's yours.
John, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Sure. Well, the difference between transplant organs and non-transplant organs are. Obviously, transplant organs are hearts, livers, anything that can be transferred in between one human being to another to preserve or extend life.
We just heard that a whole face was transplanted recently.
That's true.
Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you with that. I just thought it was an interesting news story. I don't know if you've been following that. But okay, so that's a transplant. What about the organ parts?
Sure. So the non-transplant are like arms, legs, whole heads, a torso, and they're used for medical research and all sorts of education and training. Say paramedics learn how to use a tracheotomy to perform one in an emergency situation. They'd rather practice on a live human being.
Brian,
and you need to be able to access those and get body parts to medical researchers and to medical educators and trainers.
Brian, what regulations exist for organ donors and how the organs are stored?
So organ donors are part of a market that is heavily regulated. What we traditionally understand as an organ donor is someone who's donating a heart or a kidney to go into another living human being. And the federal government has extensive regulation of that market. You must be a nonprofit if you're going to recover such body parts, and they strictly regulate how they're distributed and specifically prohibit their sale. But on the non-transplant side, there are virtually no rules. There's no federal law, and there are only a handful of state laws. And that's because the vast majority of regulation was written for the transplant market. And as a result, on the non-transplant side, you have a virtual free-for-all where almost anything can go. We found that almost anyone can open up a body broker firm to solicit bodies for research and education, dissect them, and then sell them. And the conditions in which they are stored and distributed vary. Depending upon the company and the policies and procedures it's decided to implement.
Haven't cadavers often been used as teaching tools in medical schools? Did the medical schools have rules?
Medical schools have more sophisticated policies and procedures by and large. That's not to say there haven't been problems with medical schools. But the difference largely is that bodies donated to a university usually stay at that university. There is no sale of those body parts to third parties. And then after medical students train on them, they're cremated and returned to the family. But what we have here in our investigation is a look at private businesses that have flourished over the last few decades amid a lack of regulation. Because they realize there's huge demand for human body parts, and they can provide the supply. You know, in their case, they're soliciting donors over the internet, at retirement communities, through hospices, hospitals, and funeral homes. and then dissecting those parts with the sole discretion of what to keep and what to return to the family, and then selling those parts to third-party end users that range from medical device companies to surgical training programs.
Do any states monitor the donations and the sales of body parts? John?
There are about a handful of states that truly monitor this in any significant way, but they all do it differently. Virginia, Oklahoma, New York, Florida do it to some extent. Other states have passed laws but don't enforce them at all. New Jersey has a law that says you have to be a nonprofit, but they've never really implemented the law. But we found throughout the West, there's virtually no regulation whatsoever. With the one exception is in Oregon, you have to get a license and you get inspected every 2 years. Unlike the transplant side, where there's rigorous inspection and reporting requirements, there's virtually no strong inspection process or government oversight at all.
What kinds of body parts can you buy, and how much does a body part cost?
Well, we found that, you know, just like any market, firms are going to price, at the maximum that they can get, and so prices fluctuate. And we found human heads going for $300 to $500.
And why would somebody buy a human head?
Well, there's all sorts of very important training and research that requires a human head to be able to do it in a way that trains the doctors or allows the research to have the right conditions for what they're seeking. So from young dentists who are learning to do implants to surgeons wanting to test out a new tool that would allow them to access the brain. Many uses for a human head.
So pretty much all of the sales are to researchers or to medical schools?
No, on the contrary. There are other uses too. One of our stories documents how the U.S. Army has bought human body parts from private brokers to use in blast experiments designed to, in that case, develop a mannequin that could be used to train how to improve how military vehicles defend against roadside blasts. In that particular case, what we found, however, is that many of the donors who ended up with the military in those blast test experiments had specifically said they did not want to go to the military as part of their donation, a violation of their consent.
I'm speaking with Brian Groh and John Schiffman, who have written a series for Reuters called The Body Trade. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Why do people donate these bodies? Is it a matter of not being able to pay for a funeral?
Sure. Well, there are two real reasons that people donate. One is altruism, which is wanting to provide for others and to benefit science. But the second reason, and the reason that we found more prevalent, is that these body donation firms offer free cremation if you donate your body. The average funeral costs about $7,000 for burial and ceremonies and that sort of thing. And if you choose cremation, it costs between, say, $500 and $1,000. And so what the funeral homes and the donation firms do is they solicit people by saying, we'll give you a free cremation. You won't have to pay for anything. We'll pick it up, the body. We'll take care of everything. We'll return cremated remains.
But they're not paying for the body, and they're not giving the donor any say in how the body would be used?
That's right. That's right. They make general, vague, promises that it might go to help cure certain diseases, but the body brokers can't guarantee and won't guarantee necessarily where the bodies will go. And what people don't seem to realize is that the bodies will be dissected and sold, and it'll also be leased, which is something that we found very surprising. So the same head might be leased or rented, you know, three or four times. The same shoulder might be used three or four times as a way of making money. You could look at it as either making money, but you could also look at it as getting the most out of that donated body part.
Now, you mentioned that New Jersey had a law that only allowed for nonprofit body brokers. Are there nonprofit body brokers throughout the country?
There
or is this
some.
just a lucrative business?
So one of the things that we found is that there's a significant lack of transparency in the body broker market. And there's no registry of firms. There's no trade group keeping track of who's in the market. So we sought, you know, to do something very fundamental. Who's in the body broker business? And we found more than 30 firms active in the market over the last 5 years, of which two-thirds were for-profit and the rest were non-profit.
And if I wanted to get into this business, what do I have to do? Do I just register myself as a body broker?
In most states, you wouldn't even have to do that. You would just have to get a business license. In, say, for example, Colorado, you need a special license to cut hair. You need a special license to drive a cab. In New York, you would need to go and get a license. In Oregon, you'd need to get a license. But in the vast majority of states, it's just another business. There's no special requirements at all. You would just need some startup costs, which would be a van, some freezers, perhaps some equipment to dissect the bodies, and a willingness to go out and knowledge of sales, of convincing people to donate their bodies to your business.
A listener, Tim Brew, asks on Twitter, if I'm an organ donor on my New York State driver's license, what does that mean in this context?
In this context, it means that Tim has authorized transplant tissue banks to recover organs and tendons and skin. And that's the heavily regulated part of the market.
So that would not be going to the body broker?
No. That would be something that Tim would have to choose to do separately. And, you know, depending upon which firm he went to, he should receive and fill out a consent form authorizing that type of donation. And in some cases, both can happen. So a transplant organization might recover some specimens, and the individual could also be a body donor, and that firm to which he donated would receive the rest and decide what it might want to keep and distribute.
I'm speaking with Reuters investigative reporters John Schiffman and Brian Groh, who have given us a series called The Body Trade, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Brian Groh and John Schiffman. Their articles, The Body Trade, were published through Reuters. And I'm wondering about the review of court police and internal broker records that Reuters did. How many instances of body parts being misused or abused have you found since 2004?
We found nearly 2,500 body parts that had been misused since 2004.
You also say desecrated.
Right. So there were instances where they were simply abandoned or thrown into medical waste, where they ended up, not to get too graphic, but they ended up moldy at the, you know, they were abandoned in storage lockers, just in, you know, things that are medically inappropriate and undignified to and disrespectful to the people who donated to the bodies. And a lot of times this happened. A lot of these people who did this, you know, they went in going out of business, declaring bankruptcies. They had tax liens. I mean, they were bad businessmen to boot.
And they couldn't just have passed those body parts on to other businesses that might have wanted them?
Well, technically they could have, because they have sole discretion what to do with the body part once they received them. And we definitely saw that brokers distribute to each other if somebody's in need of an extra set of heads. You know, another broker might be the supplier. But in these instances, we found that the businesses or the businessmen were just getting out of the business and didn't want to properly take care of or properly cremate and return the body parts that in the way that it should have been done.
You looked at one company, Science Care. How long have they been in business, and how did its founder, Jim Rogers, come up with his idea of how to conduct his business?
Well, Science Care was created in about 2000, and Jim Rogers had just graduated with an MBA from Arizona State in Phoenix, and he decided he saw a need for matching researchers and medical device companies with the body parts that they needed, and there was a shortage, and so he started soliciting hospices, hospitals, clergy. He enlisted all sorts of contacts, and he got tens of thousands of people to donate their bodies. We were able to get some of his tax records from several recent years, and he was earning it looks like about $3 million a year on selling, leasing body parts. He's created what's considered one of the industry's leaders in the market, and there's never been any allegation that he's ever done anything wrong or that Science Care has ever done anything untoward towards the bodies. What we focused on in the story about Science Care was the fact that they found a way to make this incredibly profitable.
And you say he based his business model on McDonald's?
So he is said to have used the analogy that the quality of body parts they supplied, no matter where what Science Care facility they were coming from, would be like McDonald's, that no matter where you go, the Big Mac's always going to be the same.
What's a collaborative referral deal with funeral homes? How do the funeral homes encourage people to donate their bodies? Brian?
Oh, sorry, Leonard. Yes, so the collaborative referral deals are partnerships that Science Care and other body brokers have struck up with funeral home operators, where they will pay them fees for providing services related to donors and directing those donors to that particular body broker, you know, should they express an interest in wanting to donate. You know, one of the questions that arise here is, you know, whether this is an ethical, you know, practice by the funeral homes, and, you know, whether payments that may be related to signing up donors with a broker are a proper payment, you know, paying for the bodies.
Aren't some funeral homes also starting their own body broker businesses? Would that be a conflict of interest?
Well, you would think that it might be.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
It definitely raises questions, because a funeral home can sometimes raise more money, earn more money, by doing a body donation rather than a cremation. And if you have someone who is poor who comes to a funeral home, a lot of people don't realize how much it costs to have a funeral. Or they're surprised and, you know, they're not expecting the death. And so they arrive there and they realize that this is going to cost several thousand dollars in fees. and they may decide to become a, you know, a pauper case or find some other cheaper way to do it. But the funeral home can then make more money by referring it either to a body donation company or, in some cases we've found, where funeral homeowners have actually gone into this business because they find it lucrative enough and they've invested. And yes, it raises all sorts of questions about conflict of interest when you go to a funeral home and the funeral home is then selling the body parts or leasing them.
And do they, whether it's the funeral homes or the body brokers, do they let potential donors know that their bodies may be sold?
That's one of the fundamental misperceptions about this market. We reviewed the consent forms from more than a dozen brokers and found that none of them directly disclose that the body parts may be sold. In fact, brokers talk in euphemism. They say that they receive fees related to the costs of obtaining, recovering, storing, and transporting the body parts. But we found documents showing that they clearly attach value to individual body parts. And we also found testimony in which they talk about setting prices based on supply and demand. And donors don't know that.
Brian, why did you try to purchase two heads and a spine from a body broker?
We obviously found that there's very little regulation across the board in the body broker market. And so as part of that finding, we said, well, we wondered what type of policies the brokers themselves had in place to vet their prospective customers.
What did you tell them about yourself? Did you tell them you were a reporter?
We used my name, my company's name, my email address, and said simply that we were seeking human tissue for a research project. And after a few emails, one broker ultimately sold us a human spine and two human heads.
How much did the different parts cost?
So the spine and the heads each cost $300 plus shipping, with the shipping for the heads slightly more than for the spine. So not very expensive.
What did Angela MacArthur, who directs the body donation program at the University of Minnesota Medical School, say about the condition of the body parts that you received and how they'd been shipped?
She basically said, I can't believe what I've seen here. That the body parts that were received would not be possible to use for research at her institution. And that was significantly based upon very sloppy and cursory paperwork that accompanied them. So, you know, for medical researchers, knowing the backstory, if not the name of the donor, and they don't know the names, is very important. The medical history helps them understand a little bit more about the specimen that might factor into their research. In this case, all of the one-page medical histories were handwritten. One of them was virtually illegible, and they contained inaccurate information. And another important element is the ability to track those specimens, especially, say, when you have more than one of the same kind of body parts, say, heads. The situation we saw was that there was no identifying number attached to the specimens. And in fact, there were conflicting numbers on the documentation that accompanied it. So she was horrified.
You tracked down the family of the person whose spine you got, a 24-year-old man named Cody Saunders. What did they say when you told them about what had happened to their son's body? Would they have donated it if they knew that it was going to be cut up into separate parts for sale?
They would not have, Leonard. This was a heartbreaking piece of our reporting. You know, we received the specimens with very limited information, and in the case of the spine, Cody had died so young and on his birthday that a cross-reference of obituaries in the general area around where the broker resided turned up his obituary, and you know, we thought tentatively that this might be him. But what unfolded was shocking. When I first went out to where the family lives, which is a campground at the foot of the Smoky Mountains in an old motorhome, it became clear as I started to ask them about their decision to donate that they knew very little about the process, nor even what they had signed. You know, to be more specific, Cody's father, Richard, hardly reads. His mother, Angie, suffers from anxiety and depression. And when Cody died, they were given 3 days to have his body removed from the hospital. And they didn't have any money. So they were desperate for some option. And while family friends had offered to pony up the money for a cremation, they didn't feel comfortable taking money from people they knew. And 2 days into the process, a relative came to them and said, hey, I might have found a solution. And that was the body broker not too far away. They were read the documents. They didn't read it themselves. And so what we found is that their understanding of what would happen was that pieces of skin would be taken from Cody that might go to research related to some of the health problems that he had. But that's absolutely not what happens.
Now, we have very little time left, but you said this is still all legal, yet a body broker named Arthur Rathburn was arrested last year, and a company called MedCure Incorporated was recently raided by the FBI. What did they do to get in trouble? And I have about a minute, unfortunately, for you to tell me.
Because it's not illegal to do it, to sell body parts, most of the cases have been made in terms of fraud. And in the case of Arthur Rathburn, he is accused of sending diseased body parts to medical researchers infected with hepatitis and HIV. Mm. And, you know, so it's more they focus on fraud. The one thing I just wanted to add to what Brian was saying about this heartbreaking story about Cody is that we, Reuters, decided to cremate the ashes of his spine, and we returned it, and Brian returned it to the family to try to make them whole.
So you've gotten personally involved in the story as well. Would it have been possible for you to remain dispassionate in investigating these stories?
Well, in this case, we got to know the family through the course of our interviews. And the bottom line, Leonard, in that case is that, as Cody's father said, he had no other choice. He didn't have another option because he didn't have any money. And had they known more about what really happens, they would not have done it. So personally involved, you know, means having been with the family for many hours, and understanding the circumstances of what led to their decisions and then explaining what transpired here. They were grateful for knowing, had happened.
I gather that some medical schools are having a problem finding body parts because they are they're in competition with these guys. My great thanks to both of you for being on our show, Brian Groh and John Schiffman, their series, The Body Trade, from Reuters. I can't say it's been a pleasure, but it's been fascinating.